From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello and welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. You are you, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, a show that looks at, how would you say we treat the stuff that we look at, guys?
With contempt!
Everything. No, we look at all things, I believe, in a manner which would place us at the center of them, like thinking about it. Okay, well, if we're talking about witches, mm-hmm. we're going to imagine, well, what if I truly believed that this was true?
Mm-hmm.
And also, what if I believed this is complete hogwash?
What if my mother was a witch?
Then you would be part witch, right?
That'd be pretty sweet.
It's like that old Mr. Show joke where they find out that somebody's part old.
Mm.
It's true. Well, we talk about stuff that would be often things are covered in the fringes of mainstream society. We talk about mysteries like Elias Lam. We talk about allegations of the paranormal, government cover-ups. We talk about, in short, a lot of things that people would have you believe are conspiracy theories. I love that move, by the way.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah. It's yours.
No, you made it up.
No, but I'm giving it to you.
Oh,
it's the people's move. You know, the word that comes to mind for me, I hope, is not a reach, but is measured. You know, I feel like we try to see both sides of an issue or a story or whatever you want to call it and try to put ourselves in the shoes of people on both sides of an argument. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of fun doing it.
We want to understand.
Like that Guidestone precept, tempered reason.
There you go.
Oh.
So we've looked at some very, very strange stuff, whether or not we believe – aspects of it are true or whether we believe they're false. And look behind the curtain here, folks. Noel and Matt and I don't always agree on something, you know, which is hopefully something good for the show. We are friends. We do actually hang out outside of this studio.
You say that like people don't believe you.
I know, seriously. We have a mandatory meetup, right?
Mandatory fun,
mandatory morale.
But no, man. Today's topic is a doozy. A fringy doozy.
Mm-hmm. One thing that we get so many emails and tweets and letters about, or people will find us in a bar and ask us to do something about, is lizard people. We've never covered lizard people. What's the belief here? What do we mean when we say this?
Well, it's the belief that the controllers of this world, you can call them anything you like, the Illuminati.
Sure.
Is a good go-to. Well, they're essentially a group of shape-shifting reptilian humanoids. Let's call them Babylonian Brotherhood.
All right.
Who are propelling humanity towards this global fascist state of control over every aspect of the entire planet.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's called the New World Order. You may have heard of it.
It's a wrestling thing.
Yeah.
It is a wrestling thing.
You have probably heard of this. Now, we're very fortunate to have a very diverse group of people who listen to this show. You know, some of you listening right now probably consider yourself hardcore dyed-in-the-wool skeptics. Some of you consider yourselves, you know, having an insight that a lot of the rest of the world either ignores or is brainwashed into not believing. The point is, no matter where you find yourself falling on that kind of false dichotomy or that spectrum, you have probably heard of someone saying the lizard people phrase, usually to try to discredit another conspiracy theory. So someone a few years ago is saying, well, I think that there's some pretty rampant corruption in federal level Department of Justice stuff, right? Or I think that HSBC, I use that example all the time, is running money for drug cartels. And in
You're crazy.
Yeah, in the media, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah, where's your tinfoil hat? Listen, that's an international bank, all right? Not some kind of criminal organization. You, I bet you believe in lizard people too, right? Look at this Jamoke. He believes in lizard people. And that's an effort to diminish or discredit the validity of an unrelated claim. And that's where a lot of people hear stuff like the lizard people theory. I mean, let's be honest. It sounds pretty crazy.
It does indeed.
So where did the idea come from?
Have you guys seen that TV miniseries? It was actually remade. It's called V.
Yes, I've seen both incarnations.
Don't you feel like that's on this subject a little bit?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because that's the
listeners who haven't seen it. It's basically about an invading force of lizard, reptilian aliens who wear human skin and more or less infiltrate society.
Yeah, they're benevolent. People know they're aliens, but they wear human skin
to make us feel better.
Yeah, to make us feel better, and they're after the water. I think it's the water they're after. Do you remember, Noel?
I think it is the water.
It's the water.
I think you're right, yeah.
There's some line where like, you have no idea how precious this resource is.
Gosh.
But the myth, the trope of lizard people or serpent men is even older than that.
The first appearance that I found of so-called serpent men was from this piece of literature I found called The Shadow Kingdom, which was a story written by Robert E. Howard, which was published in Weird Tales in 1929. And this guy, Howard, by the way, he is known for creating Conan the Barbarian, which is pretty cool. And Weird Tales, by the way, Ben, I think you got me onto some of this stuff, these old science fiction short stories or collections of stories.
Yes, that is one of the best examples. The Shadow Kingdom is one of the best examples of modern serpent men or a race of serpent men. We have earlier mythological examples that are usually deities of some sort, and they're reptile-ish, you know, like there's, for instance, a half-man, half-snake king of Athens, you know.
Oh, yeah.
There's a there are really creative ones like Typhon, the father of all monsters in Greek mythology. From the waist up, he's a dude. From the waist down, he's a mass of seething vipers. So we have this melding of mammalian and reptilian things.
Well, it makes sense because the dominant type of animal on this planet before humans came around, before mammals came around, were reptiles.
Right. Yeah. And then there's the other idea. There's the very It's a very strange idea that came about in the 80s as well, right?
Yeah, in 1982, a curator at the National Museum of Canada in Ottawa, a Dale A. Russell, proposed that if the dinosaur genus Troodon, which is a relatively small group of creepy bird-like dinosaurs. Have I told you guys about my bird aversion?
Oh, yes. We're aware.
Please. So the more people start talking about how dinosaurs were probably all birds, the more I'm like, glad they – good job, Comet. Whatever. You know, don't want them. Don't need them. Any bird lovers out there, I feel for you. You be you. I'm going to steer clear. Anyway, so if that small group of creepy birdie dinosaurs had not been eliminated 65 million years ago, in theory, it could have, over that period of time, evolved into a class of intelligent bipedal humanoids with a body shape similar to human beings. And of course, this was just a thought experiment. Or was it?
Was it?
So a lot of his colleagues and people who worked – you know, in the same field as him, thought that Mr. Russell was just wrong. Mr. Dale A. Russell was wrong because they were saying they would have evolved in a much similar way that it existed currently or at the time that it existed, where it was still walking around on two legs, but it was hunched over, you know, like that 90-degree angle that most dinosaurs are in, and it still would have used its snout to do most things
as its,
rather
like,
than
main
its
arms. Appendage.
Yeah, it just would have been smart.
Well, this is interesting because it shows people have been thinking about this for a long time, and there is a group of people, and we'll talk about this in detail, who in the modern day believe that the world is a vampire sent to drain. God, why am I quoting Smashing Pumpkins?
It's just in the air, man.
It's just in the air. Okay. But they believe that the world is to some degree controlled by this hidden cabal of people who are either possessed by spirits or not entirely human. Today, the person most closely associated with this belief is a man named David Icke, and he is the subject of today's show. You've probably heard of David Icke, or you may have heard of him but not known what he's about. He's a very striking character. You can find him on YouTube now.
He's around. Yeah, he's got an active Twitter. He is I actually was kind of surprised. He is a very anti-Trump guy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I sort of likened him to a sort of an Alex Jones figure in a way in my mind. But as I started digging more into his backstory and his biography, you know, while they do have similar thought processes, let's say, they couldn't be more different ideologically.
Yeah, they don't. There are a lot of things that they fundamentally disagree upon. David Icke was born in 1952 on April 29th. And he was, in the beginning, a professional footballer. So yes. For us Yanks, that means he was just a professional soccer player. And since the 1990s or so, he's made his name as a professional conspiracy theorist. That's what all the mainstream will call them. His own phrasing, he describes himself as a full-time investigator into who and what is really controlling the world. So how do we get there? The answer, the TLDR, too long didn't read about it, is ultimately arthritis. And that's weird, but that's where it starts. Arthritis ended his career as a professional footballer. And then in 1973, he got a job as a reporter with a local weekly paper. And then he moved on and eventually did work with BBC Radio as their soccer reporter, their football reporter, then worked his way up until he was working in radio. He's a sports broadcaster. He's a journalist. And so for the beginning of his career in the public sphere, he was not known as a conspiracy theorist, quote unquote, at all.
But then something happened.
We go back to that pesky arthritis. And in the 1980s, he was looking for a way to treat his arthritis, right? So he looked to alternative medicine, as you do if you're not getting pain relief from the current established medicine.
Sure.
It happens. A lot of people do this. Well, this led him to the Green Party.
Like the Ralph Nader Green Party?
Essentially, yes, except this time not in the United States. Now, he became pretty prominent amongst that Green Party. People were calling him the Tony Blair of his party. Pretty cool.
Yeah, and instead of one head person there, they have four principal speakers. He began to attend high-profile events, is advocating for, you know, Green Party issues like environmental stuff and human rights. But despite his success, he was experiencing immense personal problems. Still had arthritis, was in depths of despair, and he began to feel what he described as a presence around him.
According to Icke, he was in a hotel room in March of 1990 and finally fed up with all of these mounting problems and troubles and, you know, emotional concerns, pain that he was in. He exclaimed to the universe, "Is there anybody here? Will you please contact me because you are driving me up the wall?" Quote, end quote.
And then a response came. "It's 3 a.m, go to sleep."
The ways of the universe are mysterious indeed, as well as neighbors. We're kidding about that part, but the true story is, according to his account, a few days later, he heard a voice guide him towards some books. One of these books was called Mind to Mind, written by a self-professed psychic healer named Betty Shine. He read this book, and he wrote to her eventually, requesting a meeting on the subject of his arthritis. They got on. He visited Shine several times. There was one meeting in March of 1990 where he says he felt something like a spider's web on his face And Shine told him that that meant she had a message from someone named Wang Yi Li of the spirit world.
It seems like a bit of a Wang Yi leap to me.
Yeah, a Wang Yi quantum leap. But
it really does.
But here was the message. David Icke, you see, was no ordinary former footballer, no ordinary sports journalist. He had been sent to heal the earth, she said, Shine said, and would become famous but would face opposition. The spirit world was going to pass ideas to him, which he would speak about to others. He would write 5 books in 3 years. In 20 years, a new flying machine would allow people to go wherever they wanted, and time would have no meaning. There would be earthquakes in unusual places because the inner earth was being destabilized by the resource extraction, oil specifically. So things escalated kind of quickly there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
In February of 1991, he visited a pre-Incan burial ground in Peru, and he felt drawn to a particular circle of waist-high stones. And then he was struck with two thoughts, that people would be talking about this in 100 years, and that it, whatever it was, would be over when it rained. His body shook and all these ideas poured into him, and then rain started and the experience ended. And so he felt that this triggered a higher level of consciousness.
Dude, if only something like that would happen to me.
That has never happened to you?
Not yet.
You've never had a revelation?
Not like that. Not where rain is involved and like my body is physically responding to some kind of energy.
3 times this week for me.
What?
Yeah.
Lightning?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, was it lightning?
Did you see the singes on my hoodie?
I just feel like if you see somebody violently shaking, then you should help.
Right?
Yeah. All right. Well,
especially if you're amid waist high stones in a special holy place. That is
well. This
that
is also
cool.
Well, let's be fair too. This is also in many ways this is a revelation or an epiphany is an inner event.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And it would be unfair to say that somebody is. I'm very hesitant to cast doubt or aspersion on somebody's inner belief. You know
I'm
I mean?
Certainly, yeah. No, I agree. And I'm not, I don't mean to cast doubt on it in that way. I just mean it's an incredible thing.
And you feel like you haven't experienced it.
Yes. But I want to.
We could probably put something like that together.
I'm sure I could, you know, save up one of my bi-weekly epiphanies for you.
All right.
Matt.
So inspired by this and this higher plane of consciousness, I want to emphasize that we are giving information here without telling you if we think it's true or not. Mm-hmm. This is his account. So David Icke began to wear almost exclusively turquoise. He also felt he had been channeling for some time, and he received a message via automatic writing. Automatic writing, for anyone who's unfamiliar, is when, you know, Noel or Matt or I would take pen and paper or even, you know, a typewriter or something and have ourselves guided by some otherworldly presence to create messages. So we would essentially be another extension of the pen or the pencil, but the author would be something else, just sort of using us as an instrument.
Yeah, the idea is you put the pen to the paper or the fingers to the typewriter and you just go. And whatever happens, happens. You don't look at it. You don't actively try and write something.
And this is very important because for people who believe this, for Icke, then the stuff that arrives via automatic writing is not his idea. That's very, very important. It's not him. It's something telling him something. Mm-hmm. So what he found via automatic writing was this message that he was, and this is another quote, a son of the Godhead. And in 1991, he resigned from the Green Party, and he told them he was about to be at the center of a tremendous and increasing controversy. Now, the members of the party, to be fair, did not know maybe what he was talking about. Perhaps they thought he was going to take a controversial hardline stand on an environmental issue or something.
Something personal in his love life or something like that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it could have been anything, you know, because the stakes are high at that level of politics. but people admired him and he was met with standing ovation. And a week later, he holds a press conference
where he makes the announcement, I am the son of a godhead. And that is not an announcement that goes over easily for a lot of people.
And that's not the only thing he said. Furthermore, he said, he disclosed several other predictions that had arrived to him via automatic writing. Stuff like the world's going to end in 1997. There will be hurricanes in the Gulf of Mexico and New Orleans, eruptions in Cuba, disruption in China, and then an earthquake on the Isle of Man. L.A. will become an island. New Zealand will disappear. And a few more things. This attracted, as you could imagine, a lot of attention. And Ike was eventually invited to various interviews. And one of them was a primetime talk show on BBC. It was on a show called Wogan on April 29th, 1991. And this was the most damaging. This was another fulcrum, another crucible for David Icke.
Yeah, this is tough to watch. You can pull up a clip of it if you want. And this is roughly what happened.
So Wogan introduced the 1991 segment with, quote, the world as we know it is about to end. That's not inflammatory sounding at all.
And David Icke comes out wearing a turquoise, like, jumpsuit kind of looking thing.
Because he wears turquoise now. Yeah. They call it a shell suit.
Well, as it turns out, the host was poking a little fun at our boy David Icke. And the audience responded in kind with uproarious laughter. And Icke sort of hedged around the question of whether or not he was the son of God, replying that Jesus would have been laughed at too. And then repeating that Britain would soon be devastated by tidal waves and earthquakes.
And you can really feel in this interview, you feel the gravity, and you can feel that David Icke seems to truly believe it, at least when I'm watching it.
And the interviewer is hostile.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And yeah, trying to parade him around like a buffoon, like meant to be the subject of derision, you know?
Ridicule, yeah.
And on the same coin, though, it does sound crazy. Like, it does seem like that's the reaction you should have as a journalist or, you know, a presenter of a thing.
Fair enough, but it's opportunistic at best to take a true believer like that and parade them around and make them look foolish.
It's exploitative.
It's a very hurtful thing to watch, however you feel about this man and his opinions.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair thing to say. And so Icke was surviving through this interview and he said laughter was the best way to remove negativity. The interviewer kept, you know, kind of bullying him and said, but they're laughing at you. They're not laughing with you. And
yeah,
this was devastating for the guy. The BBC was even criticized for allowing it to go on, which is, you know, a point. I think they felt the same way that you pointed out, which was the point about exploitation. So Icke disappeared from public life. It was the talk of the newspapers at the time. This is back when people, you know, would read newspapers, and it was called a media crucifixion. And I'm not 100% on this, on whether this next event was sincere or whether it was meant to be ironic, in which case it would be a form of bullying. In May of 1991, police were called to Icke's home because a crowd of over 100 people were outside chanting, "We want the Messiah and give us a sign, David."
See, this is a known person, right, in the public sphere who goes on a show and makes this big announcement. Then a month later, you have young people who are either hungry for, you know, something like this to be true, and especially if it's someone they look up to, I can imagine them being sincere, the younger people out there doing that.
Yeah. And also, they were younger people. They were youths, as they're described. Also, kids can be mean. But
either way,
this was another crucial tipping point. Here we had once a respected mainstream media figure, and now he was – set upon this path to become ultimately one of the world's most well-known fringe commentators, otherwise known as conspiracy theorists. But when we talk about this, we've looked at the path that this guy took and the realizations he feels like he had, the way that the mainstream media treated him or the way that his contemporaries treated him. But what does he actually believe? What is his stuff that's so crazy? What's going on with this lizard people thing? We'll find out right after a word from our sponsor. And we're back. David Icke's beliefs. Let's just start with the biggest one. No need to stand on ceremony. The biggest one is the idea that modern civilization is controlled by an elite that is either comprised of reptilians, alien reptilians, or people possessed by the spirits of these creatures. Although Icke is the most well-known popularizer of this concept, most people believe he originally derived it from a guy named Zacharias Sitchin and someone else named Vuzamazulu Credo Mutwa.
Wow. Bonus points for the pronunciation, Ben.
Oh, well, we'll see.
Good luck Googling that one, guys.
All right. I will put it on our social media for anybody who's looking for the spelling. According to Icke, these reptilians are tall, blood-drinking, shape-shifting reptilian humanoids from the Alpha Draconis star system, and they're now hiding in underground bases.
And in plain sight.
And in plain sight. Similar in a way to V, the series V, as Noel mentioned, or to one of my favorite films, They Live.
John Carpenter, 1988, son.
That was very impassioned, Matt. I thought you were angry at me for a second.
No, you got to put the sunglasses on.
You guys
on.
Can't see it, but Matt, like, fist pumped. And
have you guys seen all the They Live memes popping around now with the current administration?
What? Yes. There's new They Live memes?
I think there's just ones like with, you know, Kellyanne Conway and, you know, some of the spokespeople.
As the creatures?
Yeah, kind of like doing like a flash and then they change and then back, you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I saw one with Hillary Clinton and John Podesta too.
Hmm.
But
I'm not sure. You'll have to catch me outside on that one.
I'm a huge fan. of the They Live memes and also – for everyone, Noel and I took a second during our ad break to hit Matt to cash me outside.
I had never seen it.
How about
never
that?
Heard of it.
How about that indeed?
David Icke's belief is that most of the world's leaders are related to these creatures, these beings. So he said, you know, George W. Bush, other former presidents, of course, and even Queen Elizabeth II of the United Kingdom. These theories have supporters in up to 47 countries, and he's given lectures, long lectures, which he's famous for, to crowds of thousands of people. And here's – I found an interesting poll. It says registered voters in the U.S., 4% of the population of the U.S. or population registered voters agree with David Icke. They're saying, well, things are already so strange.
Why not reptilians?
Why, you know what? Why not? And I wonder how many of those, you know, it's tough to ascribe motive, like how many of those people were ironically or dare I say dickishly.
Or just had no idea what it was.
Right, yeah.
It's tough to account for those kinds of numbers.
And so one of the things you may have heard, maybe we buried the lead here, is the idea of shape-shifting.
Yes, because like we said, these reptilians can hide in plain sight, according to David Icke. There is video evidence that he points to of people shape-shifting. And when you look at this evidence, in my opinion, as a video editor, what I see are artifacting in the videos. Much like some of the glitching video stuff you've been working on, Noel, where it's pieces of an image that then meld into the pixels of the next images that are coming up. Sometimes it happens not on purpose.
Exactly.
Especially if you're doing some kind of live broadcast with video. Sometimes those changes.
Bandwidth can get choked, you know, and that causes
weird things happen. So that's what I see when he's talking about shape-shifting. What David Icke believes he's seeing is a human of almost peeling away the human part to see either reptilian eyes, reptilian teeth, or sometimes in the cheeks or the entire face, looks reptilian and strange.
And that's a big thing in V, too. Just want to bring that back again. I mean, that is what they do. They literally have these human masks, and they peel them off, and they reveal their reptilian true forms.
So rather than explaining what David Icke believes about shapeshifting reptilians, we're just going to play a clip from a video called How Shapeshifting Works that's posted on David Icke's YouTube channel.
Not on HowStuffWorks.com.
Correct.
Now, one of the hardest things that people have to understand, and I completely appreciate it, is this idea of shapeshifting. Now, it's an ancient thing in terms of accounts all over the world, not just shapeshifting between human and reptilian, but shapeshifting between human and many different forms, animal forms, etc. People perceive it, because we're so locked into this reality is real, as like a physical, solid human body transforming into a solid reptilian body and then back again. Because I've spoken to people all over the world, vast numbers now, who have seen this phenomenon of seeing someone, a human, suddenly transform into a reptilian figure and then come back again. And the ancient accounts talk about the same thing. And people think, hey, it's impossible, mate. How can a body change into another body? I mean, the person would die, wouldn't they? Well, that's not what's happening. The only place that the physical reptilian form and the physical human form exist is in here, when their energetic form is decoded into a holographic, apparently physical form. So when something's shape-shifting, it shifts in the decoding mechanism by which we decode different energy fields. It's literally like changing a television channel. So it's in the decoding that shapeshifting takes place, because there is no physical form out there. It's in here. That's where it all goes on.
Okay, so that's, for me, a little tough to wrap my head around. The idea of our brains are constantly decoding the energy messages that are coming, or the energy fields around us, which is true with light. Light goes in your eye.
Sure.
Your brain is telling you what is, you know, that Ben Bolin and Noel Brown are sitting in front of me. Same thing with everything we hear and touch and taste, all of our senses.
Yes. So the argument that he is making, or the position that he appears to be taking here, is that the entity or the object of regard, whatever is being sensed or perceived, is the same. It doesn't actually change. What changes, why the shape appears to shift, is because of a change in the perception abilities of the brain, right?
Yes, but in this case, a lot of times we're talking about a video signal.
Which is the next interesting part, because if it were a change in perception of the viewer, then logically what would follow would be that the three of us could watch the same video and had our perceptive ability shifted, see three different things.
Yes.
And that's an interesting proposition. It gets into a little bit of philosophy, but it doesn't completely explain, like, unless the camera, the recording equipment also experiences some kind of perceptive shift, then, you know, the next question would be, Let's assume that happens. The next question would be, well, why is it still out there? If these people are that powerful, is YouTube like the last bastion of humanity?
Yes.
I don't know, man. We've talked about it before. There's a big difference between don't be evil and be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, you know, you're right about that. Certainly, why would they allow it to be there? Maybe because it seems ridiculous. You know, like, maybe if it is true, the way you stop it from being a thing is by letting people think it.
Or maybe you're one of them.
Well, I mean, I've seen my face in a black light, and it is truly horrifying.
Why do you fall asleep whenever we're in the sun?
Well, I mean, it's cozy.
Why do you have that clutch of weirdly shaped eggs under your desk?
My babies? Don't mess with my babies.
But this is, you know, our attempt to show from his perspective what he's saying, because, you know, a lot of people would assume, and I certainly assumed in the beginning, before we dug into this, I assumed that he meant that people were, you know, in some like lycanthropic style, similar mm-hmm. to lycanthropy. I guess it would be herpanthropy if they're changing into snakes. I don't know.
Well, he goes into discussing why this is happening and how it's been happening, he discusses ancient depictions of lycanthropy and how, you know, there are records of humans shape-shifting over the years that are written down in all of these native, you know, languages, native tongues.
So what exactly gives the reptilian people a leg up over humanity? I mean, I know there's this idea that they've been around for longer and perhaps had more time to evolve technologically.
Sure.
Is that the basis of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, the idea would be that it ties into ancient mythology. So whether it's Eric von Daniken or any number of ancient alien type writers, the argument is very similar. And the argument there is that the things that were mistaken for deities or gods or angels or demons were ultimately extra dimensional or extraterrestrial beings. So
sometimes both.
And so the argument that Ike is making is that these reptilians were functioning as what we would call the Anunnaki in Abrahamic literature, and that and in other myths around the world, and that what they were doing was creating hybrid races of man, or creating, you know, half lizard, half human things. And this ties into something that you probably know the most about, amidst the three of us, Matt, which is another one of his beliefs, the Saturn cult control system.
Gotta tell you.
Or SCCS.
Thank you.
Okay. Gotta tell you. I can attest that I've only watched about an hour of stuff on this that David Icke has put out there. He's got
on his YouTube channel.
On his YouTube channel again, trying to study it as though I'm taking a class or something. And my goodness, taking notes, you go down the rabbit hole quickly when you're watching one of these.
Should we play a little snippet?
Sure.
This is from the video "Saturn Isn't What You Think It Is Either."
Just a reminder, Saturn may appear to be what it is in the holographic world, that, but actually, again, it's an information field. It is a consciousness. Everything is aware. Everything has a consciousness. So these planets and suns, they have consciousness. They have awareness. They are entities in their own right. Saturn is the key to understanding so much. It was known as the old sun. It is known in occult as the old sun, and the dark lord, the lord of the rings. And the massive penny dropped for me. Whoa, the kaleidoscope moved when I started to realize that at least so many, if not all, the ancient sun gods were not gods of the sun we know today, but of the Saturn sun that was focused on before, because it was in a different position. I suggest that there are rings that we can see, but there are sound rings that we can't see that are coming out across, and we're picking them up. They make something appear to happen that does not actually happen. They can induce a virtual reality experience. The Saturn matrix, as I call it, is a frequency band which we are decoding as a fake reality. And I suggest, my view, we will find that the edge of that frequency band is what we call the speed of light. And beyond it, you go out of the matrix.
Okay, so what I'm getting from that is that he believes all these religions, secret societies, banking institutions, everything, it's all ruled, quote, astrologically by Saturn, and that these ancient sun gods were not actually gods of the sun, but of Saturn, because Saturn was essentially in a different position. Basically, Saturn, Mars, and Earth were much closer together. They were aligned in some way to where eclipses looked differently. Our sun, the one we know as a sun, interacted differently with this other sun that was Saturn. It's a lot to wrap your head around, But
sounds like some of those philosophy classes I used to take in college.
Kind of, but he is matching it up with symbols, at least.
Well, I guess I just mean in terms of like representation versus physicality. You know what I mean? Like how maybe everything we see is just being projected on a screen. You know,
Plato's cave.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know what I mean? Just like
that. Truman Show, baby.
Yeah, kind of.
But what he's saying that these all of these different symbols, they all match up from these ancient civilizations, but they go right up to nowadays with like the Great Seal of the United States, with the United Nations, their seal, the Rothschild family, Freemasons, the Catholic Church, even Madonna when she's performing at Super Bowl halftime shows, and all
what
of
about Lady Gaga?
I'm sure. I have not seen anything yet from him about that performance.
Actually, Alex Jones said it was an Illuminati satanic ritual.
When he was on the Rogan show?
Maybe.
Boy, he was
on fire.
He was drunk.
The euphemism we like to use is charming.
Yes.
I was going to say turnt.
He got turnt.
He was a little too charming to drive.
Dude straight up brought up interdimensional aliens. I've never heard him talk about that before.
Well, now it's out there.
Yeah.
And tune in and check that out. If you're a fan of this show, you'll probably enjoy the Joe Rogan show as well. Furthermore, I'd ask why you haven't checked it out yet.
Yes.
Cause we're fans of that show. What are some so there's, the argument is that ultimately there's a secret religion here.
Yes.
At play.
Yes.
So what are some examples of the symbols that he's commenting
on? Oh yeah, those symbols he brings out. There's the crescent and circle and cross, six-pointed star, twin pillars, horns of any sort, that are used as a symbol, spiders, black cubes, and the numbers 6, 8, and 15. And there's probably 20 others that he goes through and lists in the beginning of that video. That, and shows you how they match up with these ancient symbols and how they represented Saturn. And now they continue to represent Saturn, but they're even like the Bentley logo with the wings.
Okay. So here's the thing. Those symbols, while are commonplace in different parts of the world and in different parts of our timeline, are symbols that could stand for a variety of things. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the swastika, you know, is now forever in the minds of Westerners going to be a symbol of atrocity. But for thousands of years before, it was pretty much a philosophical, nice, peaceful thing.
So again, in Buddhism, right?
Yeah.
You can find it in theosophy too.
Theosophy. All right. We'll do theosophy.
We'll do it later.
We'll do it later.
Yeah, okay.
We'll do it later. So these are some of his beliefs. These are some of the ones that the world at large would say are the most strange. And we know from the interview that we've mentioned, we know from some of the clips what most of the world or what people would call the mainstream media, think of David Icke. But what's the fringe opinion? It shouldn't be a surprise to anyone who follows this stuff that there are people who would consider themselves conspiracy theorists that accuse him of being active disinformation. And this is the same thing that's been leveled at Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm.
Alex Jones, as Noel pointed out earlier, is ideologically very, very different in comparison to David Icke, but they both received those criticisms. There's no arguing that Icke has massive support or at least massive attention. He's a prolific author. His publishing proceeds alone number in the millions of pounds, which is why some people would say, you know, do you believe what you are saying? Do you honestly believe it? Or is this some sort of performance to make a buck?
Well, let's not forget too that like typically the term conspiracy theorist is not one of endearment, but one of abuse.
And, yeah,
and no one would ever call themselves a conspiracy theorist.
No,
it is diminutive. You know, it sort of takes away from whatever work you're doing.
Right. Ever since the U.S. federal government put out secret documents, this is proven. You can Google it now. I mean, don't do it if you're driving or whatever. But they put out secret documents to media outlets in the wake of the JFK assassination saying, this is the official story. Anybody who violates the official story, make sure to call them a conspiracy theorist. That is where it began becoming a pejorative, was in PR. I think at most we've called ourselves conspiracy realists.
That's my favorite.
But yeah, you're absolutely right, Noel. It's a pejorative. And to the majority of the world, David Icke is not taken seriously. And critics have painted him as everything from someone who cynically exploits the credulous, playing on their fears and concerns to make cash, to someone who is genuinely deluded, you know, yeah. Someone who might have, they would say that he might have a mental problem. But the thing is, he's not always wrong.
No.
I think we should dig into that bit after a quick sponsor break.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, here's where it gets crazy. The rumors are true. There are times where people believe that David Icke was correct. Many of his supporters contend that he's been correct about several different events over the course of his conspiratorial or fringe commentating career. One would be people believe that he predicted 9/11. What he actually said was that there was going to be a disaster in the U.S. sometime in like a 2 or 3 year span. So he predicted a disaster, but that's a world away from predicting 9/11 or something yeah. to that specificity, right? And then it's kind of like the what I sometimes call the Nostradamus problem.
Yeah, I mean, you can call a real bad storm a disaster. Right. You know, anything that requires humanitarian aid could be considered a disaster. Right. To not be specific enough in saying two planes will be hijacked and hit two specific buildings. You know what I mean? Like,
it's, yeah, you could call like your least favorite artist's next album a disaster.
The Super Bowl was a disaster.
The Super Bowl was a disaster, yeah.
Rise up.
I don't even care about football, and that was an awful day.
You know, somebody bet $5 million on the Falcons. And apparently the first half of the game, they were out there on
bought three
Snapchat
yachts.
And stuff, talking about how they had it in the bag. If you're a fan of the show, man, my heart goes out to you, or what passes for one with my anatomy. The other thing, so there's this Nostradamus problem, this vague prediction. What, like, how do we define a disaster? Nostradamus, of course, popularly known for the quatrains he wrote, which, depending on how they are translated, that's a big thing, purport to predict important events. I think we talked about it in the past in previous episodes, but I read one translation where one of the quatrains was, in 1996, build your house with wooden sticks, for war and fire will sweep o'er the land. Life will be safe for nary a man, or something like that.
That's from the Three Little Pigs, dude.
That's from the Three Little Pigs? Okay. The Coppola version?
Yeah.
The Three Little Pigs aren't in Armageddon.
Yeah. The point is, you know, I read that. I was a kid and I was like,
no wonder.
1996. I thought, oh man, it's the end. I'm not even going to get a shot at anything. I'm not going to ever like make out or like do cool drugs or smuggle anything, you know, not that. I'm saying people should go out and do that stuff. But the point is that I was credulous. I was gullible and I was misled. And there was something that was pretty vague, even if they had translated it to sound more specific. And so it's easy for us to think a vague thing is a specific prediction if we want it to be so. But again, and this is the extra twist. If we're looking at this from a matter of our brain's perceptions being the defining characteristic of the world, then does that make it true then if our perception has just changed? You know, it's a very different mindset. It's placing the hierarchy of inner opinion above the hierarchy of the outside world, which could lead into another Descartes kind of allegorical Plato conversation. But the point is, there are people who believe he was right about 9/11. There are people who believe he was right about the holographic universe theory, which is something that we have briefly touched on the show and something you introduced me to, Matt.
Yeah, you just Google Dr. James Gates, and that's literally all you have to do. Dr. James Gates Jr. And you'll find all kinds of information about proving through string theory that, well, not proving yet, but getting pretty darn close to it, that everything in the universe is made up of code that was written on Earth in like the, I forget, when in the mid-1900s.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, you know, he's – it's hard to paraphrase this because I don't understand half of it. Again, we're talking about particle physics. We're talking about supersymmetry. It's stuff that's beyond my understanding, but this guy does a pretty good job of discussing it and helping you understand it.
So Dr. James Gates is the person who believes that he found – computer code and quantum strings. Is that correct?
Yes.
They went down far enough into the architecture of reality to find the building blocks, and those building blocks were close to computer code.
Yes, that was written on Earth that, you know, that existed to create a computer. Which, you know, begs the question, well, hey, if that's true, then who made that stuff? And how are we in some kind of weird time warp where we were created, or time loop where we were created, then created ourselves, then created ourselves, then created ourselves?
And that's an interesting question because it ties into the idea of whether the universe happened or was created.
Yeah, there you go.
So it leads to very interesting things, which have we done an episode on a holographic universe?
We did an episode on Gem and the holograms.
Yep. We did an episode. I can't wait till that one comes out.
Synergy was a bad mamma jamma.
Synergy, was that the computer?
That was the computer.
I don't, you know, we did a video on it. But what we can do is go through and do an audio version. And I just found this talk from April of last year at the Isaac Asimov Memorial Debate. And it was all about, is the universe a simulation? So I think we can use that and start running.
I just figured out how the Mandela effect works. Smart aleck jerks like me say something exists as a joke, and then people remember having heard that and then get to a place where they believe that it actually happened.
Done.
You mean like how New Zealand doesn't exist?
Exactly.
We're sorry, guys. We're sorry we made up New Zealand.
It was on the when we originally put it on the map as a joke, it was on the wrong side of Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you win some, you lose some.
Definitely don't want to be on the wrong side of Australia, y'all.
No.
No.
No, 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 no. Oh, and by the way, thank you to everyone who wrote in. Melbourne.
Yes, Melbourne.
Brisbane.
Brisbane.
And one other thing. This is very unpleasant, but this is something that we do need to talk about. So 9/11 predictions may be just a little bit of confirmation bias. A holographic universe is a very fascinating subject we'd like to touch on in our audio. One thing that he did talk about that was true, and you can call it something that finally couldn't be denied anymore, or you could chalk it up to a broken clock being right twice a day. For the younger folks in the crowd, that's an analog clock, not a digital one. Because they would stop if you get the picture, you know. And that is that there was a widespread organized pedophilia or child abuse rings in the UK and the US. A lot of people have written to us asking us to look at the Franklin cover-up. A lot of people have written, especially in the wake of the monstrous actions of Jimmy Savile. He maintains that he had been saying this for a long time, since the 90s, that there was a concerted – there was not only organized abuse of children, but that there were concerted efforts by people to cover it up. Mm-hmm. There is darn near smoking gun evidence that Margaret Thatcher's organization, her government, was aware of high-ranking members of parliament abusing children and kept the knowledge secret, most likely to blackmail them or to ensure they played ball, sort of the way that the NSA could possibly keep information on high value targets that it wanted to influence.
Same way that's alleged that the BBC allowed Saville to do his stuff when, because they're making so much money off the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Very similar. So people will contend that he did not, people will contend that David Icke is pretending that he blew the whistle on Saville when he only did it after the guy died. But if we don't focus on that one person, if we focus on the idea of these organized abuse networks, then the unfortunate truth is that something like them, the unfortunate truth is that there is a truth somewhere within that. And we're not saying that all the more alarming tales of vast satanic networks are true, but we are saying there are organized, like organized crime is not a conspiracy theory. The mafia is not a conspiracy theory, right? The idea of powerful people covering up for each other is not a conspiracy theory.
It is a conspiracy, but not a theory.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's the idea that you look out for like-minded criminals.
Yeah.
You know, whatever your crime du jour may be.
Right. You steal mustard. There's somebody else in your mustard thieving gang.
Always.
And I'm not, you know, I'm not by any way saying those things are equal to murder or whatever. But the problem is that it is true that citizens of European countries, particularly the UK and Belgium, do commonly believe on it's a valid belief too that there are well-connected, highly protected child abuse rings in both countries. So consider Marc Dutroux in Belgium. The case that first off, we talked about this a little bit in the past, but this guy was convicted ultimately of kidnapping two kids who starved to death. He had probably kidnapped and killed more. He was working for other people who never really got in trouble. I think he was sentenced to maybe 30 years or something recently, and his trial was going to a standstill. Witnesses were disappearing. Somebody died in a mattress fire. Whoa. That was going to talk about a larger network, and the 30,000 people protested in the streets because they thought that someone was covering this up. One of the judges felt their life was threatened and left the case to save their family. I mean, that stuff is not theoretical, as horrible and frightening and disgusting as it is. And as crazy as some people might think David Icke is on that level, he was on to something.
That sounds like a whole nother episode. I know we just covered that type of abuse and cover-ups in the Catholic Church, but that sounds like a whole nother one. I'm not very familiar with that, Ben.
Well, there's another one that you keep hearing about Hollywood that, you know,
yeah.
There
yeah.
have been reports that have been, you know, years and years old. I believe Corey Feldman is one that wrote about it in his biography.
And kind of blamed Corey Haim's death on it.
Right. And Elijah Wood, I think, is even – he might not have exactly come out and said that there are cabals of rich and powerful men, but he has said that he felt – he saw as a child actor, got this sense of –
right.
Young actors being passed around.
At
the parties and stuff, which, you know, I don't know exactly
right.
if this is true, but it would make sense. It's this idea of privileged, rich, powerful men typically, you know, colluding with one another to get what they want. It's not the most uncommon thing in the world.
Yes, unfortunately. So those are cases where people have said that David Icke was either onto something or they feel he was correct. He is not, as you can tell through this episode, without controversy. One of the big accusations that he gets, aside from, you know, people thinking he's deluded, are accusations of anti-Semitism. And this was interesting. There's a book considered a hoax document called The Protocols of Zion. This book purports to be a genuine account of a conspiracy to take over the world by Jewish people, an account by like high place, powerful Jewish people to take over the world. For a long time, people would treat this as though it were real. It's not. It's a hoax. It's a fake. And unfortunately, it was used by many people, including governments, to discriminate against and to rationalize torture and murder of innocent people. Henry Ford, by the way, a big fan of that. But David Icke believes that it's a real book, but he believes – here's the thing. He believes it's written in code. He believes that the every time the book uses the phrase Jews or Jewish, it's code for lizard people. At least that's his defense. So he says he's not anti-Semitic at all. He's anti-elite lizard people.
Have you guys seen the episode in the most recent season of Black Mirror where it's sort of about soldiers that are deployed to take out these reptilian, like more like insect
bugs,
creatures,
right?
Bugs, zombie-ish. Yeah. Spoilers.
This part will spoil it.
You've been warned.
Don't write to us.
Well, it turns out
it was a spoiler.
It turns out that the soldiers have been conditioned to see basically refugees or people of a different race as these zombie creatures through some sort of hypnosis or drugging, or I can't remember exactly. I think it's hypnosis, actually.
You mean their decoding was different?
Exactly.
Nice.
Yeah. So this seems like a little bit of a hollow argument here for him to say that the Jews are really lizard people.
I was looking through Google just to see what is the latest news about him, Mr. Icke. And what comes up, the top hit, if you search right now as we're recording this, is from a website called jewishnews.timesofisrael.com. And the headline is Calls for Manchester Venue to be Fined for Hosting David Icke.
Because he has – this is like the biggest – other than people saying, you know, calling the guy unbalanced or deluded, this is the biggest controversy. And the biggest question is, okay, does he really believe that argument that he's making, or is he like trying to backpedal from something? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I'm with Noel on it. I don't think it doesn't match a lot of the other arguments that he made throughout the course of his career. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, but does he have a history of anti-Semitism? Like, it doesn't seem like in the early days and the stuff we talked about that was necessarily on the table. When did this aspect of his personality pop up?
This came after the path switched in the 90s. There, he also, you know, he very much has what some people will call a New Age side. Right.
Yeah, that's how he struck me. It's almost more like you said, like he was into all the green, mm-hmm. you know, alternative medicines mm-hmm. and all that stuff. Like he struck me as much more of a peace, live and let live kind of dude.
Yeah, and that's another thing that makes and that's something that does seem to come across. I got that sense too when I was reading about this. That's another thing that people find controversial about him. So they'll say, "Oh, you're supporting these treatments that aren't working." So then the idea, you know, like the strongest criticism would be people saying, you know, this doesn't work and you're selling it to people in place of, or you're recommending it in place of something that could work.
Almost like an argument that might be made against anti-vaxxers, say.
Right. Like, yeah, very similar argument. And so now the current news, which Matt just reported for us.
Well, that's one piece of it. The other one is that he's come out against Trump pretty hard, saying that Donald Trump is part of the Illuminati, which I guess is expected on one side. But then on the other side, just as I think we mentioned last week, maybe that Alex Jones is totally for Trump.
He said he would die for Trump. He said he's ready to die for Trump.
So they would not be hosting a show together, but how interesting would it be if they did?
Right?
I wonder what their conversation would be like.
There is a video you can find of David Icke hanging out with Alex Jones on InfoWars. If you want to look that up, you can find it.
Oh, that's cool. I might check that out. I want to see what they talk about.
I gotta say, political ideology opinions aside, if we've had a president that's probably a member of the Illuminati, I would say Trump is that guy.
It's funny because a lot of people were saying, you know, a lot of Trump supporters were saying that there is an Illuminati. The people who believe in it were saying that there is one and that he is being vilified because he's not member of that status quo.
That's exactly what Alex Jones said on Rogan. He's like, he's fighting against it.
I just want, look, I search stuff about the Illuminati so often. I even go to libraries and look at real books, which I know people don't do enough anymore. And like, if members of the Illuminati are listening right now, can you guys please just get a decent website? I just want something that I can go, like, let me go click on the plan. I'll even turn off my proxy things that keep the cookies from showing up. I just want to know, and I just want, you know, if you're in charge of so much, just take on one more responsibility, and that would be a decent website. Speaking of weird energy and fantastic segues, we hope that we have we hope that we've explained a little bit of David Icke's origin story, the controversies, and the things he believes, his supporters, his opponents, and his critics. We'd also like to hear from you. So let us know what you think. Is there sand to David Icke's theories? Is he on the money about some stuff? Is he absolutely wrong about everything? Is he exploiting people? Is he being exploited? Any of the questions that we brought up today.
And especially if you want to get into one of the specific beliefs or ideas that exists in one of the, 10 books that are available now on his website, or hundreds of videos on the YouTube channel. There's so much there. We want to talk with you about it.
Well, what do you say we get some listener feedback via the old
shout out corners?
First message comes from Grace, who says, my late grandfather was an NSA codebreaker at Fort Meade during the 50s and 60s, but for obvious reasons, he didn't talk about it until much later in his life. He passed on a few years ago, and while he never gave away any top secret info, one story will always stick with me. One day he was filling in for a coworker, breaking foreign codes like a boss, when he intercepted and deciphered intelligence coming from the Russians, i.e. their line of defense on the Chinese border.
Hmm.
Well, China had no idea until the United States informed them, giving them enough time to respond to Russia's advances. He quite humbly believed that finding this piece of intelligence was the first step towards improved relations between China and the U.S., while I can't confirm that Grandpa was right about that, I've always enjoyed the story, and I thought you guys might like it too.
Well, that's awesome. You know, thank you for writing in. It sounds like your grandfather was very good, very humble person. Yeah, that story
that's
sticks
cool.
with me. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, we so often forget that one person really can make an astonishing difference. For good or for ill.
And also that the NSA is doing work with, you know what I mean? Like, a lot of times when I think about the NSA, I have negative thoughts about it because of
all the
internal,
dirt you've done.
Well, in internal spying and all the things that are in the news and in the zeitgeist. But then you remember, oh yeah, they are actually doing their best to stop bad things from happening everywhere on the planet.
Hey guys, check out this sweet 32nd degree Mason certificate that a buddy of mine sent. It belonged to his grandfather.
Whoa.
Nice, yeah. It's a legit one too.
Pretty cool, huh?
Are you gonna post it on Instas?
I don't know. If I blur out the names, I think that'd be okay. I'll ask.
Okay.
Friend of the show, Wesley. It's not an official shout out, but it's a preliminary pre-shout out.
Okay.
It's a wave.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wave before you say something.
A wink and a nod.
Who's next?
Next, we have a shout out for Andrew. Oh, are these shout outs for people or from people? I don't know.
They're
what's the nature?
And
the
two.
From.
Yeah, yeah, shouting out to Andrew.
So a shout out to Andrew from Andrew. We go both ways. It's a two-way street here on Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. Hey, guys, I work in a hotel. And by the way, this is the Elisa Lam episode. Mm-hmm. Hey guys, I worked in a hotel by the Philadelphia airport. Every guest had to go through a lobby, and there were a minimum of 3 cameras that could see each guest walking in. My question is, where are the door videos to see what other people walked in or may have been in the lobby of the hotel? If the hotel is so seedy, then wouldn't they have more videos of the hotel? I don't know, not necessarily, right? I mean, if it's like a low rent joint, maybe they're getting by on the minimum security. Maybe that's part of what makes it see.
If you've got videos in the elevator like that, you've definitely got some more CCTV cameras somewhere. And
that's a good point. If you have an inside the elevator shot, there's going to be something in the hallway. Is going to be at least a canful in
the front
lobby for sure. Yeah, but they don't have to give us that footage. They release this, you know. I mean, they release this of their own volition to kind of probably, in a way, give a sense of like, okay, there was something up with this girl. We were not at fault. We did our job.
We were doing something. Yeah, that's, you know, that's a great question, Andrew, and that got me thinking as well. And I'm kind of on the same page with my compatriots here. I think the LAPD just chose what to release.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Threw us a bone, you know.
Right.
I am not usually that guy, but I am probably of the three of us was the most creeped by that episode and feel like maybe there was some serious potential for some spell work, some weirdness. But I also think that between the three of us, we had the sense that there could have been some amount of covering up going on as to what led this young woman to be where she ended up meeting her end so tragically. So, I think the fact that only that one camera was released was trying to place the blame on the victim.
And we should also take a moment to thank not just Andrew. Thank you, Andrew. But all the people who wrote in the hospitality industry who are telling us stuff about how this works. We had some great information about what hotel liability is.
Yep.
I won't say your name on the air, my friend, but the person who wrote to us and said, well, you know, I'm in the UK and at our hotel, we often get ladies who walk up and just go to a guest room.
Yeah, and bad things happen sometimes.
Right, and to what degree the hotel is liable. We'll follow up with some of that in the future. In the meantime, our very last shout out for today, we're not sure if this is Kate or Katie, but hi, we'll go with,
only because it's spelled K-A-Y-T-E, which really would allow you to pronounce it both ways depending.
Well, we're hooked on phonics, kids, so we'll try for Katie.
It's a reading rainbow.
Katie says, my name is Katie. I live in Southeast Ohio with my 15-year-old son who is on the autism spectrum. We don't have television or internet other than my phone. I stumbled onto your podcast and my son comes out to listen to you. He laughs and he smiles. He shares comments with me and we talk for hours on your topics. He loves listening to you and he is excited to see what he finds. This is the land that time forgot on purpose, and my son and I are both thinkers. Another note, I love that you are open-minded. I am a practicing pagan on a Wiccan path, and the lack of immediate judgment is a breath of fresh air. Finally, I listened to one of your live broadcasts regarding the advancement of technology in our world. You've addressed how it is becoming more likely that people will integrate technology into self and life. My thought is, has anyone taken the darker side of human nature and the likelihood of any small portion of the population going the other way? Hunters, gatherers, human prey to the technically improved preying on the weak.
I mean, I think if you want to see an example of that in pop culture, look no further than Black Mirror. We bring it up all the time, or at least I do. I'm hooked on the thing. Charlie Brooker, who is the creator of the show and is also kind of like you call him a media critic. He sort of looks at the zeitgeist and does a really good job of like pulling out tropes and trends and things that have happened. He's very funny, but he also clearly has a dark streak.
Yeah.
And that show to me is all about the dark side of technology. You know, we focus on how it improves our lives, how it makes us, you know, more connected, whereas this show talks more about the hidden flip side of all of this technology and how in many ways it makes us more disconnected and alienated and alone and scared and makes enemies of friends. You know what I mean? So I really recommend you checking that out. Not for your son. I wouldn't think it's got some very intense themes.
Yeah.
But it's a very, very well done show.
Yes.
On Netflix.
And further, I would go even further, with the question, KT, which, you talk about the bad possibilities. Black Mirror is a great example of various dystopian possibilities in the very near future. How are the technologically technologically advantaged, not already preying on people.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like how is someone from a wealthy country with all these amazing things at their fingertips not in some way participating in exploitation of people who live in countries that suffer resource extraction?
Just to get the rare earth minerals.
Right, right. Or, you know, there's a reason that the banana wars happened. And it wasn't for any highfalutin ideal about human rights, no matter how it was packaged for the masses.
And it's so easy to forget that even the least of us in this country, you know, who might consider ourselves lower middle class, we probably still have smartphones. You know, we probably still have an internet connection. We have access to these things. And we sometimes forget that other countries and people who are much, much, much worse off than we are just don't. And you know, it's, I guess, first world problem kind of thing, right? Where it's like, well, I want the nicer smartphone or I want the faster internet connection. But, I mean, we are so absurdly privileged that at times it's a little dizzying.
And it's – and it people can live in such bubbles. The way that technology that could unite us tends to make the species sort of divide. You have to wonder if that's purposeful or if that's just a sad effect of our – group psychology, but and you know, another example is Gattaca. That's a pretty good example, right?
Where if you've got the money, you can afford to pay for the gene therapy, for lack of a better term. I guess it's really more gene manipulation.
Yeah, yeah. And then the
spoiler about Gattaca from 1993.
Spoiler about Gattaca. That's not really like a
spoiler. No, it's in the trailer. It's in the trailer. It's in the tagline of the movie.
Oh, boy. Okay. Thank you for writing in, everyone. And this concludes... This also concludes our episode, but it does not conclude our show.
Not yet.
Well, I guess it depends on what happens, right? We will be back. We'll be back next week, but we will be online all the time. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We are Conspiracy Stuff on the first two and Conspiracy Stuff Show on the third one.
One last thing before we get out of here. We will be in Brooklyn, New York at the Bell House on April 8th. That's this year, April 8th. We have a show there with the Majority Report with Sam Cedar for the NYC Podfest. We will be live. We will be podcasting in your face and you will be right in front of us. You should come out. It's
going to be extreme.
It's going to be so extreme, not that expensive, and so much fun because we'll get to hang out.
Take a date. We'll make you look good, too.
And we're even thinking about doing a little meetup. So if the thought of kicking it with Ben and Noel and Matt, I just referred to myself by my first name as though I were some kind of king.
Spelled N-O-L-L, by the way.
Not true.
But yes.
Spelled K-N-O-W.
As in the grassy?
Yes.
Degrassi. God, I don't even remember where
I
was going.
Hey, we were talking about how people should let us know if they want to hang out.
Let us know they want to hang. And you know, if you want to do it via social media channels, that doesn't pop your bubble, you can write to us at that same email address we always say.
Conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.